Kali Truma.
So the idea of the Li means Lishmi. Lishmi means for the God says, for my sake your intent should be. Explain Rashi, that Rashi means normally if a person gives a present to another poor person, that other poor person is hungry. So the main thing is that you keep your heart and keep your intent. Here is, you give him the money so he can go and buy a piece of bread because he doesn't have anything. So the intent and your spirit, when you gave it, is really not necessary for that person. That person, the main thing is he has to get the nedovah. Whereas by the Rebbeinu Shleilom, it's not that way, because there's no shortage of money by the Rebbeinu Shleilom. So everything belongs to Hashem. So it's not like, so what does he appreciate? That li, it's given with what? With an intent. If you go to a gevir, a person has everything, and you give him another thing, another item, another object. So he has 1,000 watches, you're giving him another watch. It really has no significance. But if you give it to him with gratitude, and you give it to him with sincerity, and with your deep feelings, with an inscription, so then it means something. Not that the watch means, but the fact that you're giving it for him. So Hashem says, when you're going to take wealth from them, the wealth itself doesn't need that. In fact, there's a medrash we'll see later that the Avnei Shoam that is so dear, they didn't have such stones. How are they going to have Avnei Shoam and Avnei Nevuim? So it was like a miracle, like the wind dropped the Avnei Shoam. So it wasn't like that Hashem had to have them. He could have given everything, could have come b'day Shemayim, that Hashem gives them the materials and the necessary things. But what he needed from them was the li, lishmi. So that's why the whole emphasis is not on that, but the whole emphasis is on the nesino, and really on what they're giving. The yikhu li truma. That's an important point, that the emphasis really is on the li. And the idea is also the same thing the Chassam Sofer says, tikhu es truma si. He says, really, since everything belongs to Hashem, so what are you giving? Again, you're not giving any money. Everything belongs to God. Everything that we have belongs to God. So what are you giving? You're only giving your good intentions. That's why it says, "Eis kol isha asher yidvenu libo." The truma that you're giving is not the truma itself, but you're going to get the what? The isha asher yidvenu libo. You're going to give the spirit, that the spirit that you give is that tikhu es truma si. Now, there's a lot of people will say, you know, when it comes to give tzedakah, so a lot of people claim that they don't have any money. I mean, you know, they're all... So they say an interesting pasuk, an interesting interpretation of a pasuk from the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon once went to a rich person to ask for a large sum kesef because he needed tzedakah. So the usher, the person answered him, he says, "I'll ask you a shayla. If I'll be deemed, I'm allowed to give tzedakah at this moment. Why? Because my obligations are more than my assets, meaning that my net worth is zero. Not that I don't have any money, but my obligations are so great. And all the money that I have to borrow from somebody else." So he says, "I don't know if I'm really allowed to take that money and give for tzedakah." So it says the Goyim didn't answer anything. In the meantime, as they were talking, the tailor, you know, a very expensive tailor, comes into the house, and he brings a tailor-made suit to fit on the gevir. And the grower asked him, you know, he says, "If it's true what you're telling me, so where did you get money," he says, "to go ahead and buy such an expensive suit?" So he says, "That's no question." He says, "For that, I went ahead and I borrowed money, so I'll have money." But Brian said, "I understand the passage in Yirmiyah. Shiftecha, you dwell, betoch mirmah, in the midst of chicanery and plotting. But b'mirmah," it continues, "with this plotting, mo'anu, you refused, daso si, to know me." So what Ross says, "Now I understand," he says, "shiftecha betech mirmah," meaning your dwelling, your daily life, your whole action is done with mirmah, meaning you'll borrow money, you'll pay back money, you'll lend money so you can live like a gevir and you can have a good suit. But when it comes to tzedakah, the mirma, to use the mianu, you refused ladasosi, to acknowledge me. So that's what it is. You know, everybody in a person's life, so he'll use all kind of deep way to go ahead and to provide for himself. But when it comes ladas es Hashem, then you have the mirma. Now, the way they used to look at tzedakah, you know, it's interesting. The Rambam says, really, that when a person gives tzedakah, the Rambam, in the end of the laws and chapters that deal with sacrifices in the sanctuary. So he speaks there that everything that you give for God, if you bring a sacrifice, it should be a healthy, good sacrifice in the Mizbeah to show your, you know, with Cain and Hevel, one brought good, one didn't bring good, to show your effect and your service of Hashem. And the same thing, we know every mitzvah is the same idea, that you buy a nice talis, you buy a nice esri, you buy a nice mezuzah. So the Rambam says, when you give a poor person to eat, you should give him the best food. When you give him to a pair of shoes, he says, you should give him the best shoes. Why? Because he's not any different, really, than the mitzvah of that you're doing. I mean, it's a mitzvah in feeding a person, just like it's a mitzvah to bring a sacrifice, a mitzvah to give a donation, just like you give your best. So you have to give this person the best. In fact, the Priska Rav, the Beis Halevi, goes further. He says, when you give money to the poor person, so at that moment you're mekayim a mitzvah, right? I mean, if you give a person money, so this moment you're mekayim a mitzvah. The mitzvah is the chazakta bo, you should give him, to bolster him, to strengthen him. So now, what does the poor person become at that moment? He becomes like a lulav, like a pair of tefillin. Because just like you use an esrig, we'll say, to fulfill a mitzvah, so you make sure that the esrig should be a mahudar, it should be a beautiful esrig, and you should have a nice holder. Why? Because you're extolling the mitzvah, you're printing the mitzvah that you're serving Hashem. So he says the same thing he says when you treat this poor person. He becomes like a mitzvah. So you have to also go ahead and treat him with the same royalty, with the same beauty, as you would an esrig or a lulav or anything else. You don't look at it as a schlepper that you got to throw him a few cents. But this is a chefza of a mitzvah, an item of a mitzvah. That's how you have to go ahead and look at him. So, and just like it says that, you know, when you shecht, it says the chicken, you have to cover the blood. There's a mitzvah of kisui adam. So the Gemara says that for the sake of the mitzvah, though, you shouldn't just take your foot and put some dirt on it. You take your hand and you sprinkle it in a very nice, delicate way because you're performing the mitzvah. So it says when you're giving tzedakah to a poor person, you also shouldn't just like throw him a handout or something, like give with your foot a kick, a few cents or a piece of bread, he should take it. Because that's also the performance of a mitzvah. And this is an interesting thing to remember in general. Me'es kol ish asher yidvenu libay, because the nedivus alev, that which you give the person, that itself is considered the item or the object of the mitzvah. This is what the Beis Halevi emphasized. This is the emphasis on the pasuk, the equally truma, me'es kol ish asher yidvenu libay tikhu es trumasi. So again, we've made that the emphasis is tikhu es trumasi. But now the question is v'ikhu. The word v'ikhu means you should take. Hirsch says that the literal meaning of the pasuk is v'ikhu li truma, meaning klal Yisrael. It doesn't say, it says, Daber el bnei Yisrael, the community of Israel should first receive the truma. Hirsch says it has a lesson that nothing is to be given directly by the individual to God, but the gifts of each individual are first to go like to the community for purposes of serving Hashem. So what does this teach us? That it's not really the individual that's doing it, but it's the community. The community has to erect the institutions for Hashem. Not that a single individual, but it's for the whole community. So that's why he says the pasuk reads, instead of v'yitnu li truma, you should give to me, it says v'yikhu li, because he's not speaking the individual that's giving. He's saying to the community, community, you go and collect money from v'yikhu li truma, from all these individuals. Now this concept of collecting money, the community building something, is a very important idea. Even we know that a lot of people, they'd like to build communal things, and then they're the mockers. But really, when you're dealing with the community per se, it's like the Machtis HaShekel. Everybody has to give equally to have a portion of that. So according to Hirsch, that's the commandment almost. That's what the Torah mandates when it says the language, V'yikhu v'truma. It picks the word V'yikhu to say that every person. Others, however, have a different emphasis on the V'yikhu v'truma. They say the following. You know, the question is the same question. Why does it say V'yikhu v'truma? So he says, really, every person, when he does an act, for example, sometimes a person gets drunk. So if he gets drunk for the sake of getting drunk, so what do you call him? A shikah. If he gets drunk for the sake of the tzoris that's on him, so you moan with him, you don't call him a shikah, you say, afabitat amesh. I'm a bitter person, So really, the one who gives this answer is the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch in one of his form. He says, every act, what a person does, you could differentiate. If the purpose of the act is for the act itself, and then you call it as you see it, or the purpose is not for the act itself, but for some other reason, and it's necessary to do this. For example, if somebody drinks because he's an alcoholic, so that's the purpose. You say that he drinks. If somebody drinks because to drown his sorrows, you say, you don't say he's a drunk, he's a papitrench. You don't do what he is doing, because the act that he's doing is only sufal, it's only as happens indirectly the way he could solve his real problem. So he says, we understand, in a very beautiful interpretation, when Eli saw Chanan in the beginning of Shmuel, it says there that Eli the Kohen saw Chana, Shmuel's mother, who was standing there, and she was mumbling, and she was praying to Hashem. So it says there that Eli thought she was drunk, and he started screaming at her why she's into the Mishkan in such a state of intoxication. So she answered to him, she says, Lo Adoni, no my master, she says first. She says, Isha Kishas Ruach Anevi. I'm a person distraught, a person with a bitter life, and Yayin B'Shechar Lo Shasisi. I didn't drink any wine or any liquor, any toxicants. So first of all, why did she voice it this way? She should have said to Eli the first thing, I'm not intoxicated. Yayin v'sheichar lo shasisi, and ishok shas ruach anechi. I didn't drink wine, I'm just an embittered person with my lot. But she first says, I'm an embittered person, and then I didn't drink wine. The order should have been the other way around. First to deny the accusation, and then tell him why she's acting as she is. But she first tells him why she's acting, and then she denies the accusation. Why does she do it that way? So he says, for that purpose, first she tells him, even if it would be true that she did drink, but the reason why she drank was not because she's a drunkard, but Ishok Shasruach Anefi, because she drank really to forget her bitter life. But secondly, she says, the truth is that I didn't even drink. So that's why she first goes ahead and acknowledges. She says, you're wrong, because you should be able to realize that even if it would be true, like you said, that I did drink, it's not because I'm a drunkard, but because my heart causes me pain and anguish. That's why I drank. And that's why I can't be considered a drunkard. Secondly, she says, I didn't even drink anything. So now, also the same thing. People give the truma, right? They give to the Mishkan. Why do they really give to the Mishkan? Just because they're giving? Or because by giving, they're building a Mishkan, and the Shekhinah, as it says in sentence 8, will dwell by them, and they're going to end up getting, not giving. Sure, the act is giving, but this act is giving is not because they're giving. It's only a prerequisite or a necessary act for them to receive in return. So that's why you don't call it giving, rather you call it v'yikhuli truma, they should take for me truma. That means they're not giving. Sure, they're giving, but the giving is only tzufelik, it's only incidental, in order that they should be able to receive that which they're supposed to receive. That's why it says the language v'yikuli truma. In fact, in sentence 8, when it says v'yasu li mikdash v'shachanti b'sofchom, Hirsch goes into that point, and he says, we find two terms alluded to here. One term alluded to is mikdash, which means a sanctuary. The other is shochanti b'sofchom, I shall dwell in their midst. Now the term shochanti, we know mishkan. We find the sanctuary in the Beis HaMikdash. That's what we call the permanent. And the temporary tabernacle in the wilderness is called the mishkan. Now the word mikdash and mishkan are interchangeable many times. Now except one we use as a permanent sanctuary. Mikdash means holiness, kadosh. Mishkan, tabernacle, means shochein, dwell. Now when you look at verse 8, you see both terms alluded to. Ve'osuli mikdosh, meaning kadosh, ve'shochanti, I will dwell, b'sofam, in their midst. So you have both, making a mikdosh and a mishkan. But there are two aspects to it. Mikdosh means you are sanctifying something to me. Shochanti means I will therefore dwell in your place that you sanctify. So if you go ahead and you make a mikdash, I will therefore go ahead and be a shochein, dwell there. So you will be receiving in return for that which you put in, you will be receiving the Spirit of God dwelling in your midst. So the whole purpose of the mikdash is really that there should be what? The Shekhinah. That the Shekhinah should dwell in them. So therefore, v'yikhu li truma, the way we're saying it fits in well, v'yikhu, because you'll give me truma and make a mikdash, but the purpose is v'yikhu, that you should take. What will you take? Since you'll make a mikdash, I therefore will dwell in your midst. So you will have the Shekhinah, and you will end up receiving v'yikhu, you will be taking, not really giving, because the purpose of the entire event is not to give, but really to receive back again. So this fits in very well with Hirsch's interpretation in verse 8, which says that there are both things. There is a mishkan and there is a mikdash, and the important part is the mishkan rather than the mikdash. Now, what was the idea of the mishkan? Really, when you have God dwelling in their midst, so what you have is an amalgamation, or almost you have a togetherness between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Torah, which is the heart of the Mishkan, and Bnei Yisrael. They all gather together and meet in this Mishkan. Now the Medrash gives us some beautiful analogies as to God's commandment or desire for the Truma. There's two different midrashim. It first says, Lekach tov nasati lochem, we repeat the pasuk. Lekach tov nasati lochem, we sing it every Shabbos. Rosi al tazevu, I have given you a good lekach. Lekach means a purchase, lekicha, to purchase something. In Yiddish, lekach means honey. That was a good lekach. But lekach tov means a good thing to purchase. You've purchased the Torah. Torah si al ta'azehu, don't forsake it. What does it mean, don't forsake it? Don't forsake, the Medrash says, the lekach, the sale, the item that I have sold you. It says there is sometimes a person who can buy a mekach, an item, and there is silver or gold, but there's gold and no silver. There is silver, there's no gold. But the Torah that I have given you, there is silver and there is gold, and you have both, Kesef and Zoth. Then you have also certain times a Mekach, that when you buy the Mekach, you take it home, and the owner doesn't go along with it. But there are certain times a Mekach, that when you buy the item, the Mekach, you also get the one to take care of it, who comes along with it. So he says, that's a Mekach that you get, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes along with it. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYisrael. Macharti lochem Torah si. I just sold you in the previous sedra like my Torah. So not only my Torah, but I go along with the Torah. So therefore, the equally truma. So after the previous sedra, we had the Mishpatim and the Aseres Hadibros, so Hashem said, now I go along with them, therefore make for me a Mishkan that I should be v'shachanti v'solchon. That's one way it describes it. There's another Medrash that describes it even a little more vividly. It says, you could compare it to a king who had a bas yechida, who had a daughter, she was a single daughter. The king came and he wanted to take her for a wife. So he wanted to go back to his country and to take his wife back with him. So the older king told him, my daughter that I gave you, he says, is my only child. I can't go ahead and separate myself from her. Right? To tell you not to take her anymore, I can't, because she's married to you and I wanted that and she's your wife. But do me this favor. Wherever you go, make a small little room for me that I should be there living with you, because I can't leave my daughter alone. So it says, this is what Hashem said. I have given you the Torah. True, because it was made for that. But to separate myself, I really can't. So therefore, I have one little request. Wherever you go, make for me a little room that I shall dwell in its midst. And that's the idea. So we see the two different ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really describing the mitzvah of building a mishkan. And all of them are based on the fact, what unites HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the Yisrael, that they should build for him a Mishkan, a Mikdash, and he should be a Mishkan, the Torah. That means, why does he go along in both instances? Either he gave you a Mecca, a sale, and the owner goes along with it, or you married his daughter, the king's daughter, and the king goes along with it. But basically, it's because the Torah is there. Now, what happens, however, God forbid, if the son, the son-in-law, for example, happens to go ahead and he leaves the daughter alone, right? And he won't treat her as he should a wife, but he'll forsake her. And he'll start going around with other people and he'll ignore her. So the king, the father, will say, there's no purpose for me to stay here. My daughter is not here. She's not being treated. So he'll also go away. So he says the same thing is with the kesher, with the relationship of Klal Yisrael Takvarish Borch. If Yisrael, God forbid, forsakes the Torah, and they don't learn and study the Torah properly, so there is no Torah there. If there's no Torah there, so the Mekach isn't there. Why should the previous owner be there? The daughter isn't there. Why should the old king stay there in his little room? He'll go back to his palaces. So he says, that's the idea. Once, if the Bnei Yisrael leave the Torah, so then the Shekhinah will also leave them. And this is a beautiful description in the Medrash as the relationship between, we always say, Yisrael ve'araisa, there's even a song they use, Yisrael ve'araisa v'kutcha b'richu chadu, chadu, Yisrael, you know, they sing that song, ve'araisa v'kutcha b'richu. This is the unity between Yisrael, araisa, and kutcha b'richu. But if the Arisa is not there, so the unity between the Yisrael and that are really alienated. The idea is that it's two different things already. They become alienated. Now, there's so many different ideas on tzedakah, many aspects and many ideas and also human insight and nature that you can learn from tzedakah. For example, tikhu es trumasi, take trumas. So we know that Rashi quotes the Medrash, that there are three trumas mentioned here. In these pasukim, we mention the word truma three times. That's why we give the machtit shekel three times, because truma is mentioned three times in the Torah. What were the three trumas? One truma, one collection, was in these chapters. A beka legogoles, meaning they took a truma, a certain amount of silver from each person, and they used that silver, that was like a tax. Each person had to give this beka legogoles. And that was used for the foundations, for the basis that you had, for the sticks to stand in for the Mishkan, the corners for the foundations of the Mishkan. That's mentioned in the Sedra of Pekudei. player. There was also Truma for the Mizbeah. That's the famous shekel, Matzah shekel. That was also used for Karbonos for the Tzibur, meaning everybody gave Karbonos for the Tzibur. So these were the two. Now there's also a Truma mentioned in our Sefer. The others in Kisisa and Pikude, here we also have Truma, which was what? For the Mishkan, to build the Mishkan. But it's interesting. Over there, it says a certain measure that each person has to give. Over here, by building the Mishkan, it says, Me'es kol ish asher yidvenu libei tikhus trumasi zov kesev nefeshes, endless amount. And it seems that they gave so much, and you know, there wasn't like a taxation that each person has to give a certain amount. So why is it that way? So there's not in the Torah, there's the Lutzke Rav, who was a very high person. He was also a brilliant darshan. So he says, there was once a time that, in Europe, during the period when the yeshivas, the students didn't have literally anything to eat. And during that period, Rav Meir Shapiro, he was the one young man who was a brilliant person. He was the one who originated the idea of the Daf Yomi. You hear about the Daf Yomi, and that was his contribution. The idea of the Daf Yomi. So Meir Shapiro was also a senator in the Polish Senate, and he was the Rosh Hashiva, the Lublin Rav. He built up the Lublin. But he was a very powerful person and also a very brilliant person. So he built in Lublin the first time they ever built the yeshiva, which was a beautiful building. In fact, now they didn't destroy that building, it's still standing, and I think they used it for some kind of a medical college or something. But anyway, the whole world contributed vast sums of money. So there were people that were complaining at that time, and they asked, he says, look, people don't have what to eat. Why doesn't he better take this money, all right, and use this money, give them food? So the Lutzke Rav said, I'll answer you. And he said, he answered him with this medrash that Rashi brings down. He says, why did Hashem tell to take the money for the Mishkan, like in our Sefer, for the building of the Mishkan? He said, Me'es kol ish asher yidvenu libei. He said, when it came to the sacrifices, he said, every person should make sure to give a bekel gilgolis, to give a certain amount, a machzia shekel, so there should be sacrifices to eat every day on the sanctuary. But when it came for the building of the Mishkan, he didn't worry about that. He says, just give to your heart's desire. There was no form back. So he says, the Torah knew how people give. So everybody will tell you, of course, students that are sitting and learning in the school, right? The same thing. What's more important? The building, the sanctuary, where you offer the sacrifices, or the sacrifices themselves? So everybody will tell you, of course, the main purpose is the sacrifices itself, because we know that the law of dealing with the sacrifices you could bring even on Shabbos, and you can't build the sanctuary on Shabbos. Yet, he says, the Torah goes ahead and it speaks about Hashem knows that when it comes to give a building, he doesn't have to go and give a tax on each person. He could just say, the equally truma, and everybody's going to shower you with kesev zov. So much so, that it says later, Moshe had to tell him, stop bringing. But when it comes for the purpose to bring the sacrifices, so there you have to admonish them, no, each person has to give, because otherwise, he says, you don't get any money from them. So it's so true in human nature, because we know in fundraising that when you fundraise for a building, you can get all kind of money. But you want the money in order that people should sit and learn, he says, that won't help. It's two different worlds. So that's how he was answered. And he says also, it's interesting, the third medrash, which says, for the foundation stone, for each foundation, you need to also give a tax. He says, because people won't give you money for the building unless they see that you're actually building. So therefore, to put your initial foundation, there you have to give a forcible tax. But once you have the foundation, he says, that's alluded to, that is not passive resolve that you could possibly need. And he uses the medrash, which is really interesting when you think into it. Now, I also pointed out before that the list of the valuable items, verse 7 says, Avnei Shoam ve'Avnei Meluyim. Shoam stones and stones for the settings, for the ephod and the choshen, in verse 7. Now, the reason I said it's so expensive, that should have been really before gold and silver. That should have been mentioned the first item, not the last item. So the answer given, there are five answers that the Medrash said, mentioned before, where did they get the Avnei Shoham? Where did they get the Avnei Meruyim? The Ananim, the clouds that helped them or accompanied them, so the clouds brought them there. So it comes out that where did they get it from? They got it from Hashem, Mishulchan, it's called Mishulchan Gevoa. They didn't have to go carry it, they didn't have to go work for it, they just got it as an offering from God. It didn't cost them anything. So he says, since it wasn't at any cost, or it wasn't at any effort from their behalf, so therefore it wasn't b'teich nedivus halev as much, right? It wasn't the spirit and the soul and the sacrifice that went in. So therefore, although in value it was listed as the greatest value, but in nedivus halev, in contribution of the spirit and the effort, it was of the smallest because there was no need for their own sacrifice or their own generosity, since it was specifically given from Hashem to them for that purpose. Like we said earlier, everything belongs to Hashem. He has it all there. The idea is he wants the person to give nedivus halev. Now obviously the gold is more nedivus halev. The idea, the greater the effort ensued by you, or involved by you, that's the greater sign of nedivus halev. So this is the purpose. The idea is that Medrash even goes further. It says that they gave it to the Nesiim. It fell by the Nesiim, and the Nesiim were the ones that gave it. So it should surely have been, these Nesiim were worthy of having that gift. That's true, but it still wasn't their own determination. It didn't come from their own effort. And therefore, the greatest gift that a person could actually give is when he goes ahead and he puts in his effort. For example, we have the mitzvah of Bikurim. The mitzvah of Bikurim, a person works all year and it finally comes out a piece of fruit. It's not that valuable. He brings that first fruit. So it says when he comes to the altar, it says he prostrates. Normally when you bring sacrifices of much greater value, you don't find the idea of prostrating oneself. Prostrating oneself shows that he gives over his whole being into Hashem. The answer is because this may be only one small cluster of grapes. But the effort that went into it, I'm nurturing it and growing it and then bringing it to Hashem, that has within it the greatest contribution of the essence of the person himself. And therefore that's considered hishtachaviyah, that's considered to be the greatest contribution that that the person could make. Now, this is a note that's worthy of learning, as I mentioned before, why the Avnei Shoham and the Avnei Meluyim is really mentioned near the end. The Avnei Shoham and the Avnei Meluyim is mentioned near the end. Then it says, V'yosu l'migdosh, like we mentioned, v'shochanti b'seichon. Here also there's another beautiful medrash of the Chazal. It says, when Moshe came to Hashem and he said, Hashem told him, make me a Migdosh. So Moshe started trembling and he said, how could that possibly be? How could a person make a house for God? It says that the heavens and the higher heavens, this, all the sphere of the universe can't hold in Hashem. Hashem holds the world, not the world Hashem. So how could you even possibly go ahead and make a house for God? How could I do that? How is it possible? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm not asking you to make a house beyond your conception or your ability. Lefi keichom, according to they, being that they live in this earth and they have the strength only of human beings, I want them to the best of their ability to go and make a house. I'm not going to look for a place suited to me, but rather the best that they can provide for me. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, bring me a korban. Korbanilach mili yishai, he said. Bring me the daily sacrifice, which would be like the bread of God. So again, Moshe said, if I'll take all the beasts and all the creations of the world and bring them as a sacrifice, will that mean anything to God? So what significance, how can I possibly bring a sacrifice? Or what value is it? So again, Hashem answers him. He says, I'm not asking for you for that much. I only want one little sheep. I don't ask you to go and gather all the beasts and bring a sacrifice. I only want from you to go ahead and to give a sheep. Third time is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, V'nosnu ish kofer nafsho. He sees that it says each person will give a redemption, the shekel, kofer nafsho, which we read last week, will give the shekel as a redemption for his life, for his soul. So Moshe said, who can actually, there is not enough wealth in the world to be able to redeem the person's life, in a sense, that a person should be able to find forgiveness for his sin and redemption by giving money. There is no such thing. How could he find enough to give that he could find kapor and forgiveness? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, not like you think that you have to go and work your whole life to gather wealth to give redemption. Each person should give a machz ha-shekel b'shekel ha-kadosh. So the Chafetz Chaim said, from all of these midrashim, the response that Hashem gave unto Moshe, says we learn a very important thing. We learn that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't make demands with his people more than they can actually do. Every person is only supposed to do that which he is able to do. And therefore, in Kehelis, Shlomo HaMelech says, Kol asher timotze yotcho la'asos b'kochacho aseh. Whatever you have within your power to do, that's all you have to do, and not more. Sometimes a person is blessed with wealth, he can do more. Sometimes a person is blessed with intelligence, greater intelligence. So does that mean that the person who has a lesser degree of wealth, or lesser intelligence, will not be able to serve God? So there's a famous saying from Rebbe and Rav Zusha. He says when he'll come into the other world, they won't ask him, why weren't you as great as so-and-so? Why weren't you as great as so-and-so? They'll ask him, why weren't you as great as Zusha? Meaning that, why weren't you as great as you yourself can possibly be? Because all you have to work is really that which you have, that which you are. So the Chafetz Chaim says that this is really the message over here. The message over here is that a person has to really go ahead and fulfill his capacity or his ability to the utmost. But Hashem does not demand, that's what he's telling us, he's not demanding more than this person. Obviously, if he tells a person that he wants him to do that, and this is the capability of the human race or of this individual, that's all that he actually demands. He doesn't really demand more than that. And this is a very important lesson to understand. Also, there's another important lesson that the Chafetz Chaim emphasizes here. It says, V'heveses abadim, in 25:14, it says, you put the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark. It speaks here of the construction of the ark. The poles go in to carry the ark. The idea is that you should carry the ark by the poles. And it says, in the rings of the ark, the poles should remain. They shouldn't be taken away. They shouldn't be taken out from the rings. That means that the poles forever remain in the ark. The ark would be behind the curtain, and in the ark, the Kruvim would be on the ark. Remember, ever seen a picture? We'll show a picture of it in the book. And the Kruvim would be, you would see that the poles are forever in the ark. Now the idea of the poles being forever joined in the ark, what does this really mean? So the idea is that Chafetz Chaim once spoke, he said, that they had to look for public support. They were trying to organize then. In Poland, there was a great gathering. So the idea of Chafetz Chaim said that if a person, he was speaking about the idea of supporting Torah. And he says, we know that the Badei Ha'orom, the staves that were put in, they were always next to the ark, the Orom. But the ark itself was made from gold, but it was made from Zohar Tohor, from pure gold. The Badei Ha'orom, the staves, were not the Zohar Tohor, but they were gold. So he says the ark depicts those who study the Torah itself. And that, of course, is a higher level. But the stage, he says, depict those who support the Torah. And that is connected to the ark, and it never leaves the ark. Even when the ark goes in, he says, to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and to the Holy of Holies, the stave goes together with us. What does this teach us? It teaches us that if a person supports the Talmud Chacham, or he supports Yeshivas, if he supports Torah, because he supports Torah in this world, he says, when he'll come into the world to come, he also will not be separated from the ark. It will be one. And therefore, he says, it will be together with the ark in Olam Haba. He says, this is the meaning of the famous Pasuk, where it says, Smach Zvulun Bitzei Sefer. Rejoice, Zvulun, when you go out. V'yisofar in the Torah. V'yisofar O'alefa, and Yisofar in his tent. So he says, Zvulun is the one who supports Torah, and Yisofar is the one that studies Torah. So if Chafetz Chaim interpret the Pasuk, he says, Smach Zvulun Bitzei Sefer. Zvulun, when you leave this world, Bitzei Sefer, you can really rejoice. You should be happy. Why? He says, Yisachar be'ohalecha, because you will be together with Yisachar in the world to come, together, just like in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, be'ohalecha, in his tent. Now, when a person will say, yeah, but I'll be embarrassed. I mean, yeah, I'm going to sit next to Yisachar and Zvulun. And Yisachar knows all the Torah. He'll be sitting in the Mechitza of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he'll be understanding all the Torah, and I don't know anything, I'll be sitting there. So what am I going to get from that? So the Chafetz Chaim said even further, he says, when a person sits beside Landonim, it means he supports Torah, he says, so when he comes to the Elam HaEmes, he won't be despondent because he doesn't really understand. But he says that he will be learned, and there he will somehow be able to understand the knowledge that Yisachar had will be transferred to Zvulun. And he brought down a story from this, that there was really a machlokis as to an interpretation of a law of Shatnet. And Reb Chaim Volozhiner had like a dream. So who came? A person came, an individual, a person who he knew in life, that this person was a simple tailor. Simple person. So he came to him in a dream, and he like asked him in the dream, what is the halacha and this law that we didn't understand? And this simple person expounded to him the entire Talmudical discussion and all its sources. So what does it see here? That when he becomes in the world to come, although here he only supported the Torah, say, how does he know? But since he doesn't leave the Talmud Chacham, so when it comes into the world to come, he'll also be able to understand the Torah just as well as the Talmud Chacham. So that is the junction of Zvulun and Yisachar. So the Chafetz Chaim is telling us here a very interesting point. He's saying that not only is the partnership a partnership forever, but also the knowledge that Yisachar requires, not only the compensation, Levin Mitzvah, he'll be able to sit in Gan Eden. But what good is it sitting in Gan Eden if you don't know what's going on? So he says it's also the idea of being able to understand that which is going on, and that schus, that merit, we also will accrue unto him. Which is a very important point that the Chafetz Chaim says. And he was emphasizing the idea of people who do not have the opportunity to study Torah, but they can gain this greatness by committing to Torah in that sense.